Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. So, here we are. We have reached the end of the first week of the country in lockdown. If you are one of the people doing their bit, staying at home, only going out for absolute necessity and entertaining your children, your partner or your parents, I salute you. We are going to be here for a while, ladies and gentlemen, so you may as well get used to it. Today, we are going to try and celebrate what is great about our country, what is amazing about our people, and just how we are going to get through all of this, the biggest challenge to face our nation for three generations. Forget the stupidity of the minority out there, ignore the nastiness of the small-minded, and let us be thankful that this government is handling the crisis with a level of calm and common sense in the face of an army of critics from the media, the Labour Party, and armchair medical specialists. Yesterday, Chancellor Rishi Sunak unveiled a £9 billion rescue package for the self-employed. Not everyone was satisfied by what he did, but he went a great deal further than most people expected. Today, he's being urged to speed up the payments, which at the moment won't be available until June, and I'm sure he might be able to do that. We'd like to be your voice on this, so if you have particular concerns, please let us know. I know that some of you are saying that you'd like to have seen other measures being brought in. We'd like to hear from you what those are, because we can then pass them on to the powers that be. You can call us, of course, on 0344 499 1000, because your views and your news is most important to us, because we are the only radio station in the land that cares about what you think, that cares about what you want, and that actually listens to what you will want to do. Coming up, we'll bring you the latest news from Downing Street, which has effectively suspended the housing market and asked for councils to house all the homeless people. I'm expecting Idris Elba, Sam Smith and Lily Allen to step forward in the next few hours, amongst many celebrity friends, maybe even Emma Thompson, to offer beds in their palatial mansions for all the people that they're always banging on about feeling sorry for. 0344 499 1000. And because it's Friday, we have the Perrier Awards, an homage to my brilliance in broadcasting this week. Plus, our homeschooling section today is all about cooking. So don't forget to listen to that. We'll be talking to a celebrity chef from Ready Steady Cook. And as usual, we are live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter. Get on it right now. You can watch us as well as listening to us. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, the newspapers this morning seem to be full on the front pages, very much more on the economy and the economics of this particular pandemic than they are on the medical part of it. So let's do the complete opposite of that and talk to one of our favourite doctors, Dr. Lawrence Gurlis, who is a London GP, of course, at Same Day Doctor, because we need to know, as well as the financial aspects of all of this, how the kind of medical community is following the virus and how the virus is proceeding. Dr. Lawrence, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks very much. How are you coping with it all?
Yeah, I'm just trying to check my temperature, which I do every day at the moment.
All right.
The batteries have run out on my thermometer. So, okay.
I mean, it's a funny time, isn't it? Because, I mean, from any given moment to moment, I will sometimes think, oh, I feel a bit hot, and then I'll get a bit sweaty, and I'll think, well, if I'm a bit sweaty, that's not a bad thing, because that means I haven't got a temperature, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And if I cough, I'm thinking to myself, oh, God, you know, have I got it, you know? But so far, so good. I still think I might have had it, and I know I've bored people with this story before, but I had a kind of, you know, fairly persistent kind of cold type, you know, sore throat, headache, bad ears, bad everything, you know, snotty nose, for about sort of 8 weeks from the beginning of December to the beginning, to the middle of sort of February.
Yeah, I have to say, Mike, that I've started doing these blood tests, these antibody tests this week.
Okay.
And I've seen a lot of people in your type of situation.
Mm.
And there's me thinking also, well, you know, I see a lot of patients, I must be immune. I have to say, most people are disappointed. I've picked up just 10% of the people that I've done, they're actually positive. A lot of people have had these winter colds. thinking, oh, well, you know, I've thrown off coronavirus, I've survived. And also, it means you're immune and you can go out and you know, enjoy yourself with gay abandon.
Yes.
But actually, I would guess that you're not immune and you haven't had coronavirus. And I know you can have it without symptoms, but the people we've picked up, you know, they've been in bed for a week,
right?
And they really know they've had the virus.
So, well, the only reason I would say what I say is not because I wish to be cavalier about it in any way. I certainly don't want to go out there and make out like I'm immune or anything like that. But the medical establishment has told me that, you know, you can have a variety of different symptoms. You can have very mild symptoms. You can have had coronavirus without knowing it.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I'm aware of someone today with virtually no symptoms and had a positive swab as well. So it's that was a swab rather than an antibody test. So it's very difficult. And one of the problems is we're still not testing enough people in this country. The swab tests are not freely available. The antibody blood tests are not freely available. So we really don't know. Having said that, the one figure we can look at is the death rate, because that's pretty reliable.
Yes.
And I've been saying for a while, and I don't want to say I told you so. I said that Italy has reached peak, and it has, I believe. And I said that we are not just simply 2 weeks behind Italy, and we're going to follow that curve. We're absolutely not. There'll be sadly more deaths in this country, but we're not going to get the 800 deaths a day that Italy and Spain are suffering at the moment.
And why is it that, I mean, we can sort of understand why Italy might have had a problem, but why Spain?
Well, it's a difficult one. I think a cafe society, a lot of young people who were going out, whether being a Catholic country and whether that makes a difference as well. But I think more importantly, it's a country that probably haven't had a lot of flu since the Spanish flu, which was 100 years ago. Probably not vaccinated, so that generally the level of immunity, not to COVID, but general immune system, is not what it is in the UK. I mean, I have no idea whether Spain has flu vaccination campaigns the way that we do in the UK. Now, I may be wrong, and it may well be that the flu vaccine doesn't protect you against COVID. It's very odd that Italy is worse than China. China's a country of how many billion people? 1.5 billion people?
Yeah.
And yet...
Well, Spain is now worse than China as well.
Yeah. Why are two first world westernized countries? And the things are, as I say in paradise, a lot of young people in a cafe society, people who were going out socializing every evening for a long time while this pandemic was in the early stages.
Yes, I mean, I certainly know... Just anecdotally from someone that went there at the time, when we were sort of at the beginning of starting to be aware of coronavirus and starting to take precautions, Spain wasn't doing anything.
Yeah, I think that's right. But, you know, having said that, Spain and Italy have now been shut down, for a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
We're only just, I think, beginning to see the number of cases plateau out. And, of course, from our point of view, what we need to know is when is it going to plateau out here, if it isn't already, and I hope it is. But then when and how do they lift the restrictions? I mean, at what point does Mr. Johnson stand up and say, we're going to open the shops?
Right, or the pubs.
If he starts saying we'll open the pubs and restaurants, can you imagine what it would be like?
Well, I'd be straight downstairs and straight into one, I think.
Well, yeah. you and 50 million other people.
Yeah, right.
And that's the problem from the government's point of view is they may well bring this under control, and I think they are, and I think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
But what happens when you start to relax the restrictions, and when do you start doing that? Because I think people are going to go stir crazy. I said to my wife yesterday, although I am still going to work, still part-time, I'm trying to do much from home. I said to my wife, is it a week since the lockdown? She said, no, it's 2 days.
Yes.
It feels like a week.
It really does. I mean, it was an interesting piece. I don't know if you've seen it. It's been doing the rounds on social media from The Spectator, a piece by a sort of retired doctor, a guy whose name I'm just trying to find to see whether you know him. Dr. John Lee is his name.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
And he's writing a piece basically around, you know, what if you know, all of this that we're doing isn't actually necessary? What if it doesn't need to have been done? I don't really follow that argument because at the end of the day, I think people have accepted it. Most people understand that it has to be done, and I don't think there's any point in making the argument that, you know, we're putting the economy at risk.
No, I would disagree with him totally. This has to be done. The economy is at risk, but I think people's lives are more important.
Yeah.
And I think things will bounce back, but it'll take a long time. I mean, people are talking about some chains of shops are saying they may never reopen. I mean, the retail sector has been having a bad enough time anyway. Mm. But this has to be done. We have to isolate. And hopefully, if we can get a sort of three-week isolation to get a fire break to stop the virus spreading, then hopefully we're okay.
And I actually take a different view as well, which is that, you know, as you say, quite rightly, some of the high streets were suffering pretty badly anyway. Yeah. This might actually have the reverse effect. Albeit in a bizarre way, because the government is willing to stump up so much money, it's willing to give so many tax holidays and tax breaks to people that it might actually rejuvenate business.
Yeah, push money into the economy. Yeah. But, you know, I'm talking outside my area of expertise.
Don't worry, everybody does that now.
Everyone's an expert. I've now become an economics guru.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, how are you on world trade? You know, I remember all those people who knew everything about
on
world
the
trade.
Brexit. Yeah. I'll give you my opinion on the Brexit deal, Nick. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, this is the thing that really annoys me. You know, you might have heard my intro to the show today. All these armchair sort of, you know, epidemiologists and pandemic specialists I mean, I'll tell you what's really starting to grind my gears at the moment is the media questioning the Prime Minister and the medical specialists who do these press conferences every day. You know, people from Sky News, people from the BBC and the Daily Mail saying, wouldn't you save more lives if you did this? It's like, what's wrong with you, you know?
Yeah. No, I think they're doing okay. Maybe they should have done some of the things they're doing a bit earlier, but I'm not going to criticise them. And
I mean, it's
think
a massive problem, isn't it? Can you imagine wrestling with this?
No, it's huge. And you've got to balance people's lives, running their service, getting the supplies to the doctors and nurses, getting the testing kits out, and worrying about running the economy at the same time. It's a nightmare. It really is. It's war. People have said to me, this is war. It's a world war. We live in very strange times. You know, watching TV, as someone said on Twitter, you see people on TV program films going to restaurants and shaking hands.
Yeah.
And you think, no, that's a different world.
Yes, I know. What are you feeling about the sort of supply chain, if you like, of people working in the NHS, people who are supposedly being exposed to the virus on a daily basis, but not necessarily with enough protection?
Yeah, we were taken by surprise. But then who wouldn't be with something like this? We didn't have enough protection equipment for the staff. I think some of it's getting there now. I'm not sure that problem has been solved yet. It has been an issue, and we don't want a situation as in Italy, where 12% of the cases are in frontline medical staff. That would be an absolute disaster.
But I mean, we took a couple of calls yesterday from people concerned that their spouse was working in the NHS and they didn't have any protection, and they should, in their view, have had like the full kind of chemical warfare type suit. I mean, is that what they need?
I think that if you've got the right equipment with the mask and the hat and the right mask, the PPE 3 mask, the gun and the gloves, you know, that's good enough. It doesn't have to be a full space suit. But there has been a shortage even of the real thing.
Yes. And the other thing that sort of I always try to seek clarity on is things like in the front page of The Sun this morning, the headline, "One Brit Dies Every 13 Minutes." I'm pretty certain that if you were to take that statistic any other day of any other year, it probably wouldn't be that far different, would it?
Yeah, there is this argument that some of these people would have died this year anyway, and people die of flu. This virus is exceptional. It's incredibly contagious. That's the thing. It does spread to people very quickly, and it does have some very nasty effects on the lungs.
Yeah.
So I'm not the thought, this is just flu by another name. This is nasty stuff.
Yeah.
We've got to get rid of this. We've got to get a vaccine. We've got to get the world vaccinated against this. It's absolute health priority. You know, in this day and age, when people talk about heart disease and cancer and other degenerative diseases, to think that an infectious disease 100 years down the line from the Spanish flu, an infectious disease is causing this with all our modern medicine. That in itself it's surprising.
Yeah.
And we should take it very seriously indeed.
And what about the reasons why some people are affected differently? I've heard, I mean, again, I'm not expecting you to give me a straight answer to this, yeah, because you may not know, but I've heard, I mean, it certainly seems to affect men worse than women. Our understanding is that it affects people with underlying health concerns more than other people. Yeah. We haven't really still yet seen a case, certainly in this country anyway, of anyone who is not otherwise healthy, you know, or somebody who's got it badly, who's, I mean, I'm looking at a story that's just breaking now about a 36-year-old.
I think there have been some, like one young girl I read about with no underlying health.
Yes, except there's been questions asked about that already, because apparently it's her parents who have said that they think she had coronavirus, but it hasn't actually been confirmed.
Okay. So, it hasn't been tested.
Yeah, so nobody really knows for sure. Similarly, I've got a case in front of me here saying a 36-year-old NHS nurse with no underlying health issues is apparently fighting for her life in hospital in Walsall. Yeah. But again, until you know all the actual details of the case, you can't know for sure.
Yeah, one thing that's not been talked about, I've been told that smokers do worse than non-smokers,
right,
which on first principles wouldn't make sense. And I think in China, the men smoke a lot more than the women.
Okay.
So I think that's some of the data. But I think it's probably real that men do worse. I don't really know the answer to that.
Right. And, I mean, the other thing I've heard, and again, you can completely dismiss it as just sort of, you know, pub talk, if you like, that there might be some link to different types of blood. Like blood type might have a key.
Yeah, no, that's
is that rubbish?
Yeah, that's the whole blood group. Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I'm more than happy for you to debunk anything, you know.
Yeah, no, so what people used to ask me about what blood group they are, and so they can choose what diet they are. I mean, it's about as valid as that.
Right. So I mean, as far as you're concerned, the progress, if you like, of the virus at the moment is exactly as you would have expected it to be.
Yeah, I've been optimistic. This talk of 250,000, 500,000 people dying is nonsense. Even this 20,000, we're on top of this now. We are plateauing out in this country. We've just got to be patient for another 2 to 4 weeks,
right,
and then gradually lift the restrictions.
Okay.
We're at the peak. And I said 2 weeks ago, by the end of March, we're going to see the beginning of the end. And everything I've seen so far, bearing in mind yesterday's death figures were amalgamated with sort of a day and a half rather than a day's figures.
Yes.
And we'll see what today's are like. I believe that, as I said, the end of March, we will see the beginning of the end. And by the end of April, we'll be seeing real progress.
Okay. Well, that's very encouraging news, Dr. Gurlis, and I think that many people will welcome that. I will let you go with this thought. Apparently, one piece of good news is apparently International Whiskey Day today. So feel free to leave from these premises right now and go and have a couple of shots of scotch.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Lawrence Gurlis. Thank you very much indeed. GP at Same Day Doctor.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The good people of California had a nice surprise to wake up to this morning, by the way, despite the fact that they're in lockdown. Harry and Meghan are moving there. Isn't that great? Great news. Let's move to Hollywood. Okay. Let's talk to Henry, who's in the Cotswolds. Hello, Henry.
Morning, Mike.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Happy Whiskey Day to you.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's a bit early for me, but I'll have one later.
Well, I've got one right by my bed now.
Excellent.
I've been in lockdown for, this is the end of my 6th week now.
Oh, goodness me, really? How's that working out for you?
It's bloody miserable. I'm afraid to say, sorry about that. Look, I've got immediate family in all of the areas where it's been really dreadful. North Italy, immediate
Spain.
Family. Spain, Holland, right. And funnily enough, San Diego, California. Now, the reason I'm phoning, a couple of things, really. The first thing is I want to send my love and thoughts out to everyone who works in a field that I used to work in, which is with people with autism.
Okay.
And because of the nature of autism, it's very difficult to have a change of pattern and things like that.
Sure.
And so, of course, that's very difficult. But the main thing I want to say is beg people to take this very, very seriously. I loved that interview you just had with the doctor.
Yes.
Although we cannot be sure about this being the end. I've had my daughter in the UK. She had this virus in must have been January.
Okay. Was she tested for it?
No, but I can assure you she had all the symptoms. She thought she was going to die.
Right.
And she's a really tough cookie. I mean, she's there's no doubt about it. This was not any normal, anything like a normal thing.
Yes.
And I just want people's behaviour. I mean, I'll give you an example. I've got here in front of me from my sister-in-law in Italy. She's actually been studying this virus, and she reckons that her exact words, and if the idiots in the UK, and this is only a couple of days ago I got this, still mixing and mingling, don't wake up and smell the coffee, or soon they'll be getting the smell of death.
Yeah.
I paraphrase that.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, most of that nonsense seems to have stopped now.
Yeah. Yes, I hope so. Can I tell you one little thing about my... Because I'm taking it so seriously. I've had two deliveries from the supermarket.
Okay.
I've not been able to get any loo roll. I haven't had any for weeks and weeks.
Right.
But that's a first world problem.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there. But I really think people want to be very, very careful with the... just the contamination through their shopping. I'm sure this is a very big and serious thing. And one last thing, I drink a beer called Piston Head, and they didn't have any of that, but they supplemented it with Life and Death, and it made me smile.
Listen, as long as you can keep smiling, Henry, that's the main thing. Stay safe, have a glass of whiskey by all means, because today is International Whiskey Day, and thank you so much for calling. 6 weeks for Henry in self-isolation. Let's talk to Tom, who's in Guildford. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, thank
you. Yeah, what can I do for you?
Yes, I was just calling. I'm a gas registered engineer.
Okay.
They do a lot of work for letting agents and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And landlords. And at the moment, as far as I'm aware, gas safety, annual gas safety checks for landlords are still having to be completed in all their rent houses.
Right.
Which means that we're sort of being forced to go to work, try and get into different people's houses. And I'm sort of driving around going from house to house where everyone's isolating.
Yes.
I'm just worried that we're still going to spreading it around.
Yes. How easy is it for you to keep your distance from those people when you get inside?
Well, as easy as it is in a small house, really.
Yeah.
It's still hallways. People are sort of leaving me to it, but
right.
I could have something on my hands and be in their house. See, I've got a mask and gloves and things like that, but it's still just... Like, they've deferred their keys, I think, for 6 months, haven't they, on cars?
Yes.
To say people taking... And it's the same thing with a gas safety check, really.
Right.
Except we're actually having to go into people's houses.
Right. I mean, I suppose on the opposite side of the argument that you're making, which is very valid, you might say if you weren't making these inspections, then you know, people might be in danger of the gas problem exploding.
Yeah, that is true. But then at the same time, it's not law for people to have them in if you privately own your house.
Yes.
So most privately owned houses, it's very rare. I probably do a year for privately owned houses annual gas safety check.
Right.
Whereas we maybe do 500. We don't even do that many, 500 landlords' gas safety checks.
Okay.
So if you privately own your house, it's likely you've not had an annual gas safety check anyway.
Yes, right. Gotcha.
And I think it's a much more risk
And who's responsible for making a decision about what you do?
I'm assuming Gas Safe,
right?
And the government together. So I got an email from Gas Safe. I went out to all Gas Safe engineers yesterday, saying they still do need to be done. You can do them 2 months early, but it still means that we're going into those houses now. I'm not really sure that they should be sort of turning them back, so they don't need to be done until later on in the summer.
Yeah.
I assume.
I mean, it would be handy, wouldn't it? If Dr. Lawrence Gurlis, who was just talking to us, is right, and we don't know whether he is. We're only talking about maybe doing this for a month. It would be sensible, wouldn't it, for them to say to you, why don't you just not do anything for a month?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think I'm supposed to do about 40 that I'm supposed to have done by the end of the month because they're expiring.
Right.
But all of these 40 houses had a gas safety check done this time last year, whereas, like I said, most private houses
haven't
had one done for years.
Right. Okay. Well, you know what? All I can do, Tom, is I'll promise you that I will ask the next minister I get on, the next person I get on who wants to talk about what the movements are and what the restrictions are, I'll put that very question to him, because we have a lot of gas engineers, I know, listening to this show. Many of them have called me before. So very interesting piece of information. Thank you, Tom. Now, one of the many things that we weren't able to do this week was to film Plank of the Week. But what we have done is we put it out there as a podcast. So after this show, you can go and listen to that if you wish. I did it in the company of Emma Webb and Maya Tuzi. Just a few weeks ago, we were hoping to do it with Chris Snowden. That seems a very long time ago. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you doing down in Brighton?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually. Remarkably, because I'm able to come into work, because that's what they want me to do, I'm not suffering too much because, you know, I do actually get out of the house for a few hours.
Yeah, I hope you're not going on the tube.
Certainly not, no. As soon as I saw that the idiot, who is the mayor of this city of ours, decided to put them on a weekend schedule, thereby making them go 7 to 8 minutes apart, which was a week ago Tuesday, I said, that's it for me. I'm driving in from now on. And I'm happy to say at least they've stopped the congestion charge and the car parks have become free.
Yeah, I'm pleased to hear it.
So, I mean, there is some progress being made. Are you, like me, surprised at how kind of easily this has all happened, if you like?
How easily what's happened, sorry?
Well, the lockdown. I mean, you know, if you'd said to me a month ago, you know, I think it was about maybe a month ago, you were due to come in to do Plank of the Week with us. You weren't feeling terribly well, so we didn't get to do that with you. But I was still, even as recently as 2 weeks ago, I was pretty certain that it wouldn't get to this stage. But here we are, and we're all kind of accepting it.
We are, yeah, for the time being. And, you know, the government's strategy has been controversial. I think it's been misrepresented by some people. But part of the reason for not locking down at the drop of a hat was because they feared that people would get sick of it.
Yes.
Quite quickly. And if and when we are required to go into lockdown to deal with the second wave, the government was concerned that people simply wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I think from that point of view, the government strategy has been right. But we're at such an early stage still. You know, we're going to be in lockdown for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And who knows what will happen come, I don't know, June, July, August.
Yeah, and we already have seen a couple of interesting things happening. I mean, yesterday, roundly condemned for it, as they probably should have been, Derbyshire police put a drone up and started telling people not to take their dogs for a walk in the Peak District, which appears to be a very uninhabited and quiet place.
Yeah, and this is the problem. This is why civil libertarians get very concerned about these kind of measures.
Right.
Because the police don't necessarily obey the spirit of the law. I mean, perhaps they were technically right. People walking around the Peak District were not taking essential exercise, but what harm were they causing to other people?
Yes.
I mean, particularly when you compare it to people on the London Underground, as we just mentioned.
Well, exactly.
There seems to be a lack of common sense there, and people like myself are always concerned that if you hastily push through a load of legislation, that the police are going to interpret it in the worst possible way. Mm.
Are these the kind of teething problems that I suppose we would see, though? Because somebody else suggested to me that, you know, why are the police sticking their heads into people's car windows to ask them where they're going when you're supposed to be staying 2 metres apart?
Well, indeed, yeah. And why is Jeremy Corbyn still going into Parliament?
Well,
he's supposed to be self-isolating.
Well, he's not even meant to be leading the Labour Party anymore, really. So, I mean, it's about time he went home, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he's more or less accepted that now, yeah.
But he's not retiring. Make sure you don't make that mistake, because that's what Boris did, and he got very grumpy. But, I mean, what do you see? I mean, a lot of people are concerned that because we have relatively easily moved into this fairly sort of dictatorial situation with the government, that we may not actually come out of it in the same way that we went into it, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's obviously a big concern. I mean, I don't think any of the MPs have used this in a cynical way because they want to bring about a police state.
Mm.
I think the danger will come in a couple of years' time when this is all part of history and you get various single-issue pressure groups looking back, looking at the evidence from this incredible natural experiment, and you'll have people, I think, saying, look at how much air pollution dropped by in London. Look how much greenhouse gas emissions dropped by. Look how much, let's say, crime dropped by. I think it's plausible that certain crimes, and probably overall crime, will decline over the next few weeks. Certainly burglaries are going to decline, I would have thought. And you'll get people who have a particular agenda saying, well, we don't want to bring about a full lockdown, but maybe there are elements of the lockdown we could introduce in order to deal with public health issues or climate change issues or whatever it is they're concerned about. We have seen this before. There have been quite a few public health researchers looking at the Second World War, for example, which was a dreadful time by any objective measure, but they quite liked the rationing aspect of it. They quite liked the fact that there wasn't very much obesity then, that food was more sort of evenly distributed. There was a study came out a few years ago looking at Cuba in the early 1990s when the economy completely collapsed and people were very hungry. And they ran out of oil and so they had to walk more and all this kind of stuff. And surprise, surprise, rates of obesity fell. And apparently there was some improvement in heart disease mortality. And this wasn't portrayed as being a sort of a silver lining to a very big cloud. It was kind of there are lessons to be learned here, you know.
Right.
And the underlying message, of course, is that actually deprivation and restrictions on liberties are actually a good thing in quite a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, when you see the behaviour of people fighting over toilet roll in the supermarket aisles, you do wonder whether people like that should even have the right to vote. I mean, that's always the way I'm left feeling. But I'm always a little bit nervous of looking at, you know, what you might call dictatorships and going, yeah, but, you know, the people are much more in order there than they are here. There's not as much crime in Dubai as there is in London. Well, that's fine, but, you know, you also don't get sort of, you know, your hands chopped off for stealing.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, if you don't let people do anything, then the number of people doing bad things is bound to decline.
Yeah.
The problem is the number of people doing good things and doing things that they want to do in life also declines enormously. It's too big a price to pay.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're leading inexorably to a police state by any means. These are clearly emergency laws. But, you know, history does tell us that emergency laws often spill over into peacetime. I mean, that was really the argument that Friedrich Hayek was making in 1944 when he wrote The Road to Serfdom, which is really the book that led to the creation of the Institute of Economic Affairs in the first place.
Yes.
He was very concerned that because the state had become much, much bigger in order to fight the war, that there would be people saying, well, if this works in wartime, it can work in peacetime.
Yes.
And basically, he lost that argument for several decades.
Right.
The government did intrude more into private industry, did nationalise all these companies, and of course it was a fiasco in the end. And from the kind of early 80s onwards, we tried to undo some of that damage. But that all did come from a feeling that we've won the war because we've acted in effectively a socialist big government way, so perhaps socialism and big government is the answer to our peacetime problems.
Yes, I mean, that is a massive mistake to make, and obviously all the socialists are currently making it and going on about how, you know, oh, isn't it great that actually maybe Jeremy Corbyn didn't win the election, but everybody's now having to do what he suggested. Well, it's not quite that true, is it?
No, and it shows that they don't even understand socialism,
right,
as far as I can see. I mean, what the government's doing at the moment isn't really socialism. It's borrowing a huge amount of money. It's giving it to businesses and the self-employed and to workers to tide them over. But that's not anybody's serious idea of socialism. That's not what Karl Marx was talking about. The government isn't nationalising industries, certainly at least not yet. The kind of measures that the government are putting through, the kind of borrowing that they're doing, is obviously totally unsustainable. I don't think any serious socialist would say that their dream society would involve the government borrowing £500 billion a year and just giving it to people while telling them that they're not allowed to work. So it's not even socialism.
No, it really isn't. It's interestingly,
the fetishization of debt, which we've had now for over a decade, people just seem to think that the more money you borrow, the better society gets.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that even the Labour Party in the last election were very keen to make it clear that 95% of people would not be paying any more tax. The reality is, if you want more public spending, and certainly the kind of public spending that we're seeing now and that Jeremy Corbyn promised, people are going to have to pay more tax. It's not going to be a small percentage of the population. There simply aren't enough rich people in the country, and they don't have enough money. And if you try and tax them too much, they won't be in the country anymore anyway.
Right. But it's a worldwide situation, this, isn't it? Because we've seen the US putting, you know, what, $3 trillion into the economy to keep it going. What's your view of the whole market situation? Because I was talking to somebody the other day who was suggesting maybe it's a good idea to actually shut the market down. Although, just before I ask you to answer that, I'm just going to bring you a bit of breaking news, which is apparently Boris Johnson has tested positive for the coronavirus, Chris. So just you thought that it was safe to go to Downing Street, apparently he's got very mild symptoms. But it'll be concerning for his partner, Carrie, because she's pregnant.
Absolutely. It'd be concerning for a lot of people in the Cabinet and the government and the House of Commons in general, I would
have
thought.
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll come back to that in a moment. What's your view of the market, the stock markets at the moment? Because there are some who think that it's wrong, morally, for them to be kind of basically, you know, running the casino-like atmosphere that they run while all this is going on and effectively profiteering from it.
Well, are they profiteering from it? I mean, it looks to me like the stock market, you know, anyone who's got stock market investments has done very badly.
Well, what I would say to you is my sister worked in Wall Street for many years, and she always said to me, whenever anything like this happens, the volatility always means we make money.
Well, there will be money to be made for people who are putting their money in, perhaps now or certainly over the next few weeks. There's bound to be a big rebound in the stock market, but it's fallen by something like 40%. Last time I checked, which I have to admit was a few days ago now because it's all so terrible.
Well, it bounced back a bit, I think, in the last couple of days, certainly in New York.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is bound to bounce back. And if people have got a bit of money in their pocket, I think the stock market is the best place to put it at the moment. Closing it down will obviously just stop that rebound, or certainly delay that rebound until much later. You need to be very careful about people talking about profiteering. I mean, it has no meaningful effect on the spread of the virus or any health conditions either way. People lose money, they make money. I think you'd have to have a serious kind of ethical question with people making money at all.
Yes.
To be too worried about the stock market.
Yes. No, sure, I get that. It's just that because everything else seems to be shut, and I know that it's much more automated now than it used to be, and so it's not quite as much of a casino situation as it was. From the point of view of sort of a libertarian, I just was interested in what you had to say, because in America, looking at the way that the states operate, because of the fact that, you know, the federal government does not have control over every single state without an executive order, I'm told that Florida is still very much open for business, and they have not closed it down, and the kids are on the beaches celebrating spring break and you know, hanging around with each other in a very intimate way, which is quite astonishing considering what's going on in New York.
It is, but America is a big place, you have to remember. It's not massively different from some country in Eastern Europe being open while the UK is closed down, you know. It's a federal system. The other states, I guess, could restrict movement from Florida if they wanted to.
Yes, exactly right. So what's your kind of best estimate of what happens after if we assume that we get past the worst of this, what do you think they'll do first? I mean, will they sort of suddenly say from Downing Street, OK, now you can go back to the pub, or now you can go back to work, or what do you think they're going to do?
I hope it's going to be the pub first.
We'll all be desperate for a drink by then.
Schools a bit later. I don't. I would imagine they'd do it in kind of reverse order of the way they close them down, I guess.
Yeah.
So we'd be looking, hopefully, at opening the schools at some point in the summer term, reopening some of the pubs. There'd probably be big social distancing measures in place.
Right.
I mean, if you look at China, they have reopened a lot of things. But, for example, a restaurant that would previously have seats for 40 people now has seats for 20 people. There's a huge amount of social distancing remaining in place. So it would be a very much a gentle and gradual process. And if the whole thing explodes again, they will, go into lockdown again.
Yeah, right. And as far as the trading business is concerned, I mean, there will be obviously some businesses that don't survive this. So I'm not quite sure how long that recovery then takes.
Well, this is why the government's £350 billion support package is so important. This is a very different situation to the Great Recession of 2008 and indeed every other previous recession. In your normal recession, you've got people got people running out of money. They're suddenly tightening their belts for whatever reason, and therefore businesses are struggling. They then start laying people off. Then you've got more unemployed people. They haven't got money, and it's a vicious circle. It's a very different situation here. In this instance, people have got money in their pocket. They would like to spend it. They're being prevented from doing so because the government has closed most of the shops in the hospitality sector. And those who remain on either their full wage or the 80% salary that the government is guaranteeing will presumably save up quite a bit of money over the course of the next couple of months. Mm. And when they are allowed to go back to their shops, we're bound, I think, to see a big bounce in spending. People will catch up with all the things they've been meaning to do. They'll get that haircut they've been desperately needing.
Yes.
They'll go to the pub to celebrate. So I would expect to see a very severe drop in GDP in this quarter and the next, followed by, if we assume, for the sake of argument, that we come out of this by the beginning of July, followed by a large increase in GDP, which won't be enough to make 2020 a good year overall, I'm sure, because there will be businesses that unfortunately die out, and not all money is going to be spent at the same level as it would be before. So the person who has a haircut is having one haircut rather than two, and they've allowed their hair to grow a bit more shaggier than they would have done.
Yes.
But it won't be as bad as you might think, and it is certainly not a long-term problem like a financial crisis is, or like a recession. No. We're not trying to get more demand into the economy. In this instance, actually, it's the supply that's the problem. Once the supply has opened up, people should have money, by and large, to get back to normal. And come 2021, there's no reason for the government to be borrowing any more money than it intended to this year.
No, of course. Chris, thanks very much indeed. Make sure you keep yourself safe down there on the South Coast. Chris Snowden there from the Institute of Economic Affairs. It is 21 minutes past midday on Friday, the 27th of March, and it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Now, slightly earlier than advertised, I'm delighted to say that Martha Balogun is here to present us with this week's Perrier Awards. Very good afternoon to you.
Very good afternoon and welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Thank you very much indeed.
This is where we look back over the past week of the so-called Independent Republic of Maghreb on Talk Radio and choose our favourite moments.
Tremendous.
And let's just crack on.
Let's do it.
As it's tradition.
Time is of the essence, is it not, today? Very busy show.
So, let's do it.
Yes.
First Perrier. As tradition goes to you,
Marvellous.
It's the classic pronunciation of the week.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We've got another homeschooling project tomorrow. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Project. I think it's an American thing that slips in from time to time. People have been loving my Meghan Markle.
If that's what you want to tell yourself, that's fine.
Well, okay. You think it was just a mistake?
Yeah.
All right. I take it.
But there's plenty of them in this Perrier's Award. So stay tuned for that. Former head of Royal Protection Day, Davies,
yes.
Came on the show earlier this week and he won the Perrier for Confusion of the Week.
Hello. Good night. Good afternoon to you.
Good night.
I mean, it was like 10 in the morning.
Yes. Well, maybe he'd been up all night or something.
Who knows?
We do like him.
We do like him. We do like him very much.
Very much.
But to be fair, it's very easy to forget what time of day it is because we're all on lockdown.
Yes.
Every day feels the same.
Right.
And, you know, talk radio legend Alex Dibble also wins a Perrier for the very same thing.
Good afternoon. Good morning, rather. It's Alex Dibble.
It was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Excellent.
Bless him.
It's one of those things in radio, isn't it? If you say it wrong, should you correct it or should you just leave it?
Afternoon. I think it depends.
Mm.
But then people will notice at home and you'll have two kinds of people at home. The ones who'll be like, oh, bless him.
Yeah.
And the ones who'll go on Twitter and be like,
Alex
Dibble made a mistake.
Yeah,
so
I know.
There you go.
Okay.
It is a tricky one.
It is.
Another one for you, Mike.
Yes.
It's a classic. I just can't help myself. It's Impression of the Week.
Oh, nobody asks me how I am.
Every single time.
People love it.
People love it.
Somebody actually captured the bit that I did today and put it out on Twitter.
Oh, that's good. I did think of adding that, but then we had the breaking news that Boris Johnson has COVID-19.
Yes.
So I was like, right, I don't have time for that.
No, it's a big story, this.
very big story. Yes. We'll be talking about that later with Charlotte Ivers. But let's go back to earlier in the week again. Former chief of the cancer program at the World Health Organization, Professor Carl Sikora, joined us on Monday, and he makes it to the Perry Awards for the clarification of the week.
Like a pregnancy test, you get it from, not that I do pregnancy tests on myself, but, you know.
Thank you very much for letting us know.
Yes, because that would really be a waste of time, I think. And he's probably got far more important things to do.
Well, yeah, he's probably dealing with cancer patients, yeah. And he's also very busy doing interviews.
Ever since we discovered him, he's been on every single media channel that you could find.
He's been on other shows on this station, yes. Repeatedly, uh-huh. Three times this week, I think.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Have they no standards anymore?
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know what it is, but
that's not good.
You're welcome, everyone.
There used to be a rule that you weren't supposed to put people on if they'd already been on.
To be fair,
in the same week.
Yes, but we've broken that rule today, so I wouldn't go down that road.
Okay, then.
Because we'll have... I wouldn't say that too loud.
I've usually stitched myself up.
Correct.
Thank you.
Sasha in Sunderland, she wins an award for becoming our new favourite new caller of the week.
I'm one of your, I think, number one fans, but I've phoned you for the first time.
Well, very, very nice of you to do so. Welcome.
Oh, you saved me from LBC.
Brilliant.
We did save her from LBC.
Well, a lot of people need saving from LBC.
Well, yeah, everyone.
Especially at this time of the day.
Yeah. Anyway, Sasha, welcome. Thank
well
you
done,
for joining
Sasha.
The Independent Republic. You know, Mike, these are testing times
yes.
for all of us. Some people are coming up with initiatives to...
Some people say there's not enough testing going on.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good. Yeah. Do we have like a comedy?
He doesn't have the... He should have that, really.
Like an alarm. Remember when we had the alarms?
I remember the alarms. And we liked those.
Yeah,
we
like
those. Maybe it's too serious now.
Yeah, no, we can't do it now. But we'll find something silly maybe in about 6 months that we can talk about. Anyway.
Yes.
Some people are coming up with initiatives to keep people entertained while they're stuck at home all day. Labour MP Chris Bryant is doing something on Facebook every evening. And this week he's also won a Perrier for becoming the Celebrity Booker of the Week.
When are you getting me on?
You should, if you find me on Twitter, Ron the Bryant, send me a message and I'll send you the details and we'll get you on.
There you go.
There you go. You know, I haven't done it yet.
No?
I keep meaning to and I keep forgetting.
Have you got in touch with him?
No, but I'm following you on Twitter, but I just need to send him a message.
Okay.
But I haven't done it yet.
I mean, I find it's really funny because what he just did is literally my job every day. This is what I do with people,
yes.
guys. I'm like, yeah, get in touch.
You
I'll
do
get
it more
you
successfully than he does, though, because 4 days later, I still haven't been on.
Yeah, to be fair, he should have been chasing you.
He should have been.
So,
because, you know, I'm the guy he wants.
Yes.
Apparently.
The only one.
Exactly.
Oh, dear. Another one for you, Mike.
Yes.
Congratulations, because all this week we've been doing a homeschooling segment, which we'll be doing again in a few minutes. And on Wednesday, we were joined by maths genius Carol Vorderman. You did win a Perry Award for not being the Professor of the Week.
SERDS, yeah, that was the word that I had not ever heard of before. I have no idea what it is. I don't know what it does. I have no idea what the point of it is. But my son, who is 15, does that absolutely every single week, week in, week out. I can't give you an answer.
There you go. We learned nothing, guys.
It took a long time to get there, didn't it? That
and
wasn't
still,
good. I mean, I'm surprised she was still on the phone by the end of that.
Bless her.
You know.
Bless her.
It's
we'll
like
get
one
her
of those long
on.
Questions Alan Brazil asks.
Well, speaking of long questions.
Yes.
Off to Julia Hartley breakfast.
Yes.
Poor Julia has been at home self-isolating
yes.
For about 2 weeks.
She's not been feeling well. We send her best wishes to her.
Yes, we wish her a speedy recovery. And in order to cheer her up in the meantime,
yes.
we're going to give her a Perry Award for triggering the correction of the week.
Delighted to say that Mike Graham is waiting at the other end of the line from his home to take us through the next 3 hours. Good morning to you.
Hello, Julia. I'm in the studio, though. I'm not
in
at
the
home.
Studio. They've yes. allowed you in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know who told her I was at home.
Well, I would
some
say...
Some misinformation.
I would say that's bad production.
Fake news.
Fake news.
Do you think it's the producer's fault?
I think an incompetence report needs
yes.
to be issued.
Good idea.
To...
Won't be the first one they've had.
No, it won't be. Travel guru Simon
yes.
Calder joined us earlier in the week to talk about EasyJet's boss, Peter Bellew. And you guys won the Perrier for the almost swear of the week.
They've got a new boss by the name of Peter Bellew, who is known by a slightly different name, which also starts with Bell as the first syllable and ends in something else.
I don't know what you're talking about, and
no.
I'm not going to ask.
No. Well, if you listen to Plank of the Week, you'll find out what they call him.
Very good.
It's available now on the podcast department.
Very good. Well, we're going to play a clip, but we don't have time.
Oh, yeah.
So we might not do it.
Okay. Well, no, play
Emma
that
Webb,
clip.
Emma Webb, Maya Tuzi.
Yes, it's very good.
And
Marta put it all together as well.
I did,
makes
yeah.
it even more wonderful.
So, you know, complaints at Malaga Odmanyas on Twitter, and
yes.
I'll deal with them.
There we are.
Call it Paul in Oxford gets the wrong namer of the week.
But hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Mike. How
hi.
Are you?
It's a classic, isn't it?
It is. It does always make you smile, doesn't it?
It does make us laugh, and we're like, all
right. Doesn't matter how many times
write it down
happens.
For the period.
Yep.
I'm
exactly.
always grateful for this. So, guys, keep doing this.
Yes.
This is really good for me. Sim Harris from Real News. He won a period a few weeks ago. For correcting us, and this time he gets it for the reaction of the week.
Just what the mayor does about that is a decision for the mayor. Perhaps you can get him on your programme and ask him.
Well, we ask him a lot to come on this programme, but he never comes on because he doesn't like us.
oh well.
Oh, well.
It's true.
It is very
well,
true.
Well, I can assume it's true because he doesn't ever come on. And,
well,
you know,
no.
he's quite happy to go on television. He goes on GMB.
Yep.
He goes on that other station right across town.
Yeah, the other one.
Yeah, where they don't ask him anything.
I don't know. Maybe that's why.
That's why,
who knows? I'm not here to speculate.
Do you know, I saw him in the street the other week.
I know you did.
And he didn't say anything to me.
No, of course not.
No. I didn't say anything to him either.
Well, there you go. maybe he didn't see you, and that's why.
Well, he walked right past me, literally.
Oh, bless.
With his little security detail, and also the woman that was the security detail looked a bit dangerous. So I thought if I start talking to you, you'll probably take me out.
Yeah.
You know, not in a good way.
As we say, el drama.
Indeed. In fact, drama. I was with the Rebecca, which was just before
yes,
she left.
Of course.
Yeah.
Anyway, so. Finally.
Yes.
Here's a question that you don't have to answer.
Okay.
What did Daniel in Epsom, Conservative leader of the London Assembly, Susan Hall, and nutritionist Monica Price have in common?
I don't know.
I would encourage you to have cooking into your routine. And the kind of...
That's all I do.
I know. I've been watching your Twitter page. It's great.
You know, and your pictures of dinner have been keeping me, making me hungry because that's certainly not how we're eating in here.
Well, I'm all right until I see your Twitter account on all the food you're cooking. And then I go and eat more food.
Well, it's
you're
nice
making them all hungry.
Well,
that's
it's
what you're
nice.
Doing.
It's nice, and funnily enough, we are making plans at the moment, possibly to do a little podcast, a little cooking podcast.
Yeah.
We'll bring you more news about that later.
Well, if you need someone to help,
are you allowed to come and help?
Well, I can do that down the line. Can't
I? Oh, I see. I thought you meant come and like prepare the onions or something.
I'm really bad at chopping onions.
Are you?
I cry all the time.
Oh, well, I can teach you how to do that.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Get a pair of goggles.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's all
that's
for the Perrier Awards.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.